Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Okay, what do you got for me?
What's the name of your book?
The name of my book is...
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Okay. Ukulele. Secret instrument. Attack of the Killer Asparagus. Attack of the Killer Asparagus. Attack of the Killer Asparagus. By Mike Novak. One more time. No, that's enough.
No.
Like
no more.
Dig?
That's fine. That's fine. Oh, jeez.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
If he saw a shadow this morning, there will be six more weeks of gridlock in Washington, D.C. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Get ready for one more time.
One more time.
There we go. Thank you. And welcome on the last Sunday in July. What happened to the 90 degrees that were supposed to happen yesterday? I was seeing all over the place that it was going to be 90. It didn't get anywhere near 90, did it?
But it didn't rain.
I was actually hoping it would rain a little bit.
I don't want it
to rain a lot. I suspect we might get a little bit today.
I wanted some morning showers.
Oh, and it just freshens the air, right?
So I didn't have to water my plants.
Exactly.
That was my plan.
That's what you're talking about. We get spoiled. You know, we get too much rain, and then we say, well, ease up on the rain, and then it gets dry, and we say, well, wait a second, we need a little rain. Meanwhile, the people in Southern California, well, not just Southern California, but the whole West. And I saw this news report, I think, just last night. I don't think I even have it. It's possible it's still up on my computer. You know, it's one of those things that will keep you from sleeping the rest of your life. And that the aquifers are using, or they've used a lot more water from the aquifers than they thought. And they have no idea how much water's left. And it could be really catastrophic at some point. And I know Annie Haven's listening in California. She of the Moopoo Tea. And she knows this. And she'll probably tweet something to that effect. Unless she's listening to Nikki Jabour in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I know she splits her time listening to the shows. I know some people will catch the podcast later on. One of those people is somebody I had lunch with yesterday. Kathleen and I had lunch with Larry and Luann Grabowski at Uncommon Ground because they were Kickstarter promoters. I never know the right word. And Kathleen's jumping up and down right now saying, it's this word, which is the word I can't remember. Backers, I guess.
Or supporters, right?
Yeah, supporter works. Yeah. To help get the book published. You know, the book I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Yes, that book, that one. and we had lunch at Uncommon Ground, and it was just delightful. And they even brought me tomatoes that they had grown in their yard. They had ripe, now they were cherry tomatoes. And it was, they were wonderful. And I'm jealous because in my community garden, in my backyard, those tomatoes barely exist. And I know it's the same way with a lot of people. And I'm sure there's other people whose tomatoes are doing okay. Not exactly been the best tomato year so far. Been a little cool. And that's the other thing. When I say, where are the 90s? You know, a couple of days, tomatoes would probably be really happy to have some 90s and the peppers and so forth. But, you know, the cucumbers are good. So anyway, it was wonderful having lunch with the Grabowskis yesterday. And it reminds me, and you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and see photos of our little soiree. Well, in that soiree would be in the evening. Lunche, our brunche, and we were up there on the rooftop farm with Farmer Jen from Uncommon Ground. You can see the photo of her as well. And she was showing me the cool stuff. You know, okay, here's how it works. It's the tomatoes are slow, but they still have snap peas because snap peas like the weather cool. And they continue to produce peas, which is unusual in July. In fact, she showed us how the snap peas were sending up new shoots. And as long as it doesn't get crazy hot, they're going to be fine. And folks can see this next Thursday at Uncommon Ground, this coming Thursday, the 31st of July, because I'm going to be having a book signing, thanks to Michael and Helen Cameron from Uncommon Ground, of
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
And we are going to be there at 5:30, and there will be a tour. Farmer Jen will take folks up to the rooftop farm, the world-famous organic, the world's first organic rooftop farm at Uncommon Ground Restaurant at 1401 West Devon in Chicago. And I hope a lot of you will show up. And I know I've gotten some emails from folks who are going to be there. Yes?
No, and I'm just making sure, clarifying. So the guests do have to RSVP to Uncommon Ground?
Yeah, they would really like to hear that. Or if they, you know, lose track and you're driving and or something and you want to be part of this, just write to me, Mike at MikeNovak.net. I've had a couple people do that, and I'm going to hold on to that and respond to Uncommon Ground. But the number at Uncommon Ground is 773-465-9801. So if you guys, Helen's here too. Hi, Helen.
Sup.
Sup. A woman of few words. And Helen and Carol will be happy to put that on Facebook. Let's get that number out there and on Twitter. 773-465-9801. It's also on my website, MikeNovak.net, if you go to this week's show. Had somebody write to me last week who wanted some of the insect repellent that Rick Moskowitz, by the way, he's the one who sang that little ditty. That's what you missed if you missed the show last week. The new theme song for
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
And that's what Rick Moskowitz from A-Plus Pest Control, Inc. Sang for me with brought his ukulele. And today is the Tour de Trees start in Milwaukee to benefit the Tree Fund. And he is donating a bunch of his cedar oil spray that keeps mosquitoes at bay. And somebody wrote to me and said, hey, where can I get some of that? I couldn't find anything on your website. And, of course, that's the point at which I start tearing my hair out because I spend all day Saturday writing that stuff on my website. And it's always – and I should remind people. So if you go to the homepage, MikeNovak.net, MikeNowak.net, on the right side it says this week's show. You click on that and then you get all that stuff. All of the information. But on the homepage, I've got the information about the various book events coming up, the signing events for
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
See, it makes you smile, Helen. You must like it or something.
I like Jean-Luc.
Not me so much, but she likes Jean-Luc.
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
And when he says that. So I hope folks come out to Uncommon Ground this Thursday, 5:30 to 7:30. We'll have a book signing, tour of the roof. I will do a reading from a couple three, maybe, chapters of Attack of the Killer Asparagus. And then dinner. And if you stay for dinner, you get 10% off. And what a great place to eat. The food is fabulous. And, of course, there'll be something that they've harvested from the rooftop farm. And that's one of the reasons you go to Uncommon Ground. Of course, they have a location on Clark as well, but this one is the one on Devon. Now, before we break and get to Dan Costa, who's going to be talking to us about bonsai. Do not say bonsai, please. He will break out in hives. I was showing off my magnificent tattoo here. Is it indeed magnificent, Carol?
I'm hesitating. No, it's magnificent. In a, like I said, it's like a 5-year-old tattoo.
Exactly.
It's magnificent for a 5-year-old tattoo.
And that's my style. That's my speed.
Yeah.
A 5-year-old tattoo.
Yeah.
I mean, kid. It's not five. The tattoo's
exactly.
Not 5 years old. I'm 5 years old.
Yep.
And I got it at the Sugar Beet Co-op Edible Garden Tour yesterday. They were giving people tattoos.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And it'll wash off, which is even better. I'm so proud of my tattoo. Don't even get me started on the real tattoo thing.
Do you need to tell us about your tattoos, Mike?
My lack of tattoos.
Okay.
We were riding in Logan Square the other day. Saw somebody on a bicycle. And there's lots of bicycle riders in Logan Square. And I came up with a phrase that the Chamber of Commerce in Logan Square should use to entice people to live there. And it's tattoos on wheels. Do you think that'll work?
No.
Well, at least you're honest and blunt. Okay, on today's show, I like it, tattoos on wheels. As I said, Dan Costa will be here. Not only is he going to talk about an upcoming event, the Prairie State Bonsai Society is having its annual show on August 2nd and 3rd at the Morton Arboretum. He's going to talk about how to keep your bonsai happy. Now, I don't know how many of you have bonsai and you think, oh, come on, nobody has bonsai. But people give them as gifts all the time at Christmas. And then what do? We kill them. And Dan's going to teach you how to keep your bonsai alive and which not to give as a gift, which he does occasionally. I mean, that's his passion. He's always on the show to talk about gardening stuff because he works at a garden center and he knows a lot of stuff. But his passion is bonsai. So there you go. Patrick Skatch back again. Rick DeMille off somewhere, I'm not sure. But Pat has more information, more statistics about our cool weather and lack of 90-degree days. He will be here. In the second hour, this is really fascinating. I'm having Derek Eder on the show, and I met him at something called OpenGov Hack Night. And this, I'm not even sure I remember how I found out about this, but I ended up going to this thing. And it's a bunch of techies and people, not just techies, but people interested in solving social problems. And they meet in the Merchandise Mart at a place called 1871. As I say, which has a website so slick it makes your teeth ache. And it's a group called Open City, and what they do is they create apps with open data to improve transparency and understanding of our government. This may be the wave of the future, he's going to be here to talk about that. In fact, one of the apps that they put out recently, it won an award from the Center for Neighborhood Technology The CNT had an urban sustainability apps competition. The winner is something called Chicago Green Score. And I'll tell you about my experience with Chicago Green Score when I logged on to that. And then finally, at the end of the show, we've talked for a while on this program about the Ileana Tollway being proposed for down south. And the road to nowhere that some people have called it. And we're coming up on a deadline for comment on that. And so to make sure people know about it, Stacey Myers, who's a policy coordinator from Openlands, will be here on the show to talk about the road to nowhere and why it might not be the best idea in the world. And we'll even take phone calls throughout the show, 773-763-9278. Don't forget, we're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You can go to The Mike Novak Show on Facebook. You can go to Mike Now on Twitter. You can always catch a podcast if you miss all or part of the show today. We're streaming live on MikeNovak.net, also on Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com. And we will be right back with Dan Costa.
Hi, this is Ron Calgo from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to IllinoisSolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at IllinoisSolar.org for more details.
In 1979, the American Community Gardening Association was formed in Chicago to provide leadership and advocacy for the community garden movement. Join us August 7th through 10th at the Field Museum as we celebrate the 35th anniversary of ACGA at our annual conference. Thursday, August 7th, starts with a pre-conference at Cam Isaiah Israel, focusing on gleaning and food pantry gardens, followed by a farm fresh welcome and networking dinner. Friday is a day full of workshops, roundtables, and keynotes, followed by an epic garden soiree and silent auction at the historic Garfield Park Conservatory. Saturday, we're in for a national networking event, presentations, and an afternoon of tours of some of the most vibrant community gardens the city has to offer. Sunday concludes the conference with a second-story performance of Voices from the Community Garden, highlighting personal experiences of how Chicago community gardens change lives. Don't miss this historic event. Join us August 7th through 10th for the American Community Gardening Association Conference and be part of the vision for the next 35 years. For more information, communitygarden.org.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
And we go immediately to the phones and bring in Dan Costa from Vern Gore's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. You're actually in bonsai mode today, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I got to get my trees ready for the show so everybody looks pretty and at their best.
Gussy them up.
Oh, yes.
Do you ever hang holiday ornaments on them?
Only when nobody else is looking. It's kind of a violation of the rules.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
The tree is pretty enough by itself. It doesn't need ornamentation.
All right. But yeah, but people, they shine lights on their trees, I imagine, right?
Whatever you do in the privacy of your own home.
Yikes. Put little pajamas on them and little outfits and things like that. No, they... Okay. So what does it mean, though, to get your trees ready for the big show? And let's mention that real quick. It's the Prairie State Bonsai Society's annual show. It's August 2nd and 3rd at the Morton Arboretum. It's part of Destination Asia Summer Festival at the Morton Arboretum.
And the show is open from 10 to 4 both days.
And it's actually, with admission to the Arboretum, you get to look at the bonsai, but you don't get to participate in the workshops, right?
No. Workshops, there is a fee for those.
Right, but...
Because we have masters, and you do get a tree as part of the workshop, so there is a fee charged.
By the way, I've coined a phrase for you for this event.
Oh?
I don't know if you've been to the website, but I'm calling it the Bonsai Bonanzai.
I saw that on there.
R. Okay, thank you very much.
I even saw that there's a picture of me on the website, and there's no crack apparent in the lens. So you must have photoshopped that out.
Yeah, we did. That was taken when you were here in February.
Yes, I thought so.
Yeah, exactly. We try to keep things up to date. So last time you were in the studio, we snapped a shot.
Yeah.
So what does it mean to get your plants all gussied up for the big event next week?
Well, first thing is to look through the trees, make sure there's no obvious wiring or anything like that on there.
Do you lose points if wires show? I mean,
you can show with small wires on some of the little branchlets, but you shouldn't have wire on the trunk or on the main branches themselves, because that shows a tree that's really not ready yet. It's a tree that's still in basic training type of thing. It's not a show tree.
It's got its training wheels on.
Yes, it's just a baby.
Yeah. And that's the idea, though, is you want the trees to look like they've been on a windswept shoreline forever.
They can look like anything from growing in a nice, quiet, stable park environment, which would be like trees that we call formal upright, which pretty much look like spruce trees you would see around, nice straight trunks, conical, all the way through trees that lean to one side, slanting styles, ones that hang pretty much horizontally to ones that hang downward like they were hanging over the face of a cliff.
Come on, admit it, Dan. The whole thing is to make the tree look like it's defying gravity, right?
In a way, but managing to stay stable so it would not fall over. It has to look balanced, like it could actually stand up as a 100-foot tree without falling over. So you have to maintain an asymmetrical balance in the design of the tree. If the tree looks like it would fall over easily, then it's not balanced, and that's not good as a bonsai.
Now, you're not being part of any competition, are you?
Well, we do have a best in show, which is selected by our three visiting masters. They will get together during the course of the show and choose the one that they think is the best, and they'll get a trophy. We also have a very popular thing called the People's Choice Award, where people coming to the show can pick up little paper ballots, vote for the tree that they think is the best, and at the end of the show we tally up all the ballots, and whichever tree wins, the owner gets a little trophy for that one as well.
So how many trophies do you have lining your mantle now? That's what I want to know.
I don't have any.
Come on.
Yeah, they haven't given me one yet.
Oh, well, it'll happen.
I got a nice service award from the club, about the highest award the club itself gives out, but I don't have any trophies.
So it's like the life, you got the Lifetime Achievement Award, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I've been there long enough.
Let's go through some of the stuff you sent me about bonsai. And explain briefly for folks who are listening and they're not sure what we're talking about. They've seen them. They don't realize they've seen them, probably. Mm-hmm. How would you describe a bonsai?
It is a woody plant in a appropriate bonsai-appearing pot. Some of the ones that are sold commercially are plastic pots, but ceramic pot is better. It should have a style to it, so it looks like a tree actually growing in nature. It shouldn't look like a piece of nursery stock that's been trimmed up and stuck into a pot. It should have a appearance of some age to it, some maturity to it. The tree should look healthy. It should be strong. So you want to make sure that when you are purchasing a tree that it is in good condition. We will have vendors at our show which will be who'll be selling trees, and so you know if you're looking to buy something, get started in bonsai, there will be trees and supplies and everything available at the show.
But the part of the deal is though, it's a tree in miniature. To some extent.
Yeah. The word bonsai actually means tree in a pot. But
very literal.
Yeah, it's very literal. It should be something that does look like a mature tree.
Yeah.
It's not a scale model of a tree. Obviously, there are a lot fewer branches on it. But it should have the appearance and the essence of a full-size tree.
But part of the deal is that the lack of medium, the small container actually helps to keep the size of the tree down. Isn't that right?
Well, that, but mostly it's the fact that we do a lot of pruning and trimming on the trees to maintain the size and shape. In the website from the Morton Arboretum, they had a nice little definition, I guess you'd say, of bonsai, and they said that bonsai are designed to showcase the inherent beauty of the trees and create a sense of nature in miniature. The natural world captured in a single pot. So when you look at a good tree, you should be able to imagine in your mind the type of environment or the area in which a tree like that could actually grow. So they should be a natural-looking style. It shouldn't be wild and crazy and like nothing could ever grow that way.
Don't they have any wild and crazy bonsai shows?
No, we're pretty staid.
All right. And, you know, my first experiment with bonsai was when somebody gave me a bonsai and it was a juniper.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, something along the lines of, death in a pot. I don't remember exactly what it was, mm-hmm. But
well, most people, they buy a juniper, they see it's in a pot. They assume automatically because it's in a pot, that it's a house plant. And they keep it in the house, and usually within 6 months is dead. You need to provide an appropriate environment for the tree. So something like a juniper or a pine or a maple, spruce, elm, these are all trees that are temperate zone trees. They're hardy in the Chicago area. Those trees would stay outside all year round. They do not live indoors.
So there's no problem with putting it out in the sun. With some tropicals, they say avoid direct sunlight. It's kind of the opposite with bonsai, isn't it?
What we do with tropicals is when we take them out in the spring, put them in the shade for about a week or so they get more used to the higher light level, and then just move them right into the full sun.
Okay.
Because the leaves will stay smaller in a sunny spot than they would in a shady spot. So they look more appropriate to the size of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that's kept outside all year round needs winter protection, which pretty much means either putting the pots into the ground, dig them into the garden, or put them into mulch in the late fall, or some people put them into their garages or have sheds that they can put them into.
But they should be cold areas so that the tree can actually undergo some kind of dormancy.
Yes, it's evolved in a state where it has dormancy during the wintertime, and so it has to have that as part of the requirements of the tree.
And I think that's the mistake people make with it. They say, oh, it's this tiny little thing. I better bring it indoors because it won't be able to handle the winter.
Yeah, sometimes people do that in the fall. Oh, it's going to be chilly tonight. I'll take it in. And actually, those chilly nights in the fall are what initiate the dormancy in the tree and prepare it for the winter. So it's very important that they stay outside.
Mm-hmm. All right, and you say pay attention to watering. And obviously, if you're putting your sun, your plant out in the sun, it's got the soil's going to dry, especially if you've got a small container. Mm-hmm. So you really have to pay attention to it, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I water my trees every day during the summer months. Usually the first thing I do when I go home, get home from work, is to go in the back and check on the trees and see which ones need watering and give them some water. Because water is essential to life, and if they don't have it, they're going to be dead in not too long.
Yeah. And fertilizing is important.
Yeah, you want to fertilize to maintain the health of the tree. You know, you're in a very small pot, very small amount of soil, and so the nutrients that are there are used up rather quickly, and so the tree needs to have a replenishment of those minerals so they can continue to live and to prosper. And
I know it depends on the tree itself, but as a rule of thumb, how often do you find yourself fertilizing?
I do every 2 weeks at half strength, half recommended strength. You can do it once a month at full strength. I know some people that do weekly feedings. It just, some people use organic rice cake type fertilizers, which you simply sit on the soil and they slow release nutrients into the soil at all times during the growing season.
Yeah. And that's different from what I have said on this show before, which is for our yard plants, outdoor plants, your perennials, your trees, your shrubs. I often say that I think fertilizing is unnecessary. But in a bonsai, as you said, you have so much, the container is so limited and the medium is the amount of medium is so small that you really have to provide those nutrients yourself.
Yeah, well, I grow a lot of my trees in a mixture of calcined clay, which is kind of a kitty litter type of a substance, and crushed pumice, which is rock, with a little bit of peat or composted pine bark. So you have very little nutrient in there to start out. Whereas when you plant a tree or shrub in the ground outside, you have all that's available in the natural soil.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have that with the bonsai. You have to provide that for the tree.
It
allows us to give it more control, too.
Yeah. Now, I imagine the hard part for most people, because I know what it's like when people try to prune shrubs and trees in their own yard, they panic. It's mm-hmm. it's part science, part art, and part mm-hmm. miracle, all right?
Yeah. Sometimes we rely on the miracle part.
How?
I always tell people that they need to have an idea of how the tree is going to look before they start working on it, because if you don't, if you take a, you know, I've taught classes on that, and if you take the material and you just start cutting something off right away, you might find out you needed it later on, and it's kind of like somebody ordering several pallets of bricks, deciding that they're going to build a house. They have no blueprint, so they just start piling up the bricks, and then, you know, they realize I didn't put in a door or something like that. You have to have a plan and work toward that design as you're working on the tree.
You talked about wiring. It's supposed to be a temporary training device till the tree has the shape and can hold the shape itself.
Mm-hmm.
What about repotting? I mean, I imagine a lot of folks think, well, it should stay in that little pot forever. Should it?
Well, a young tree or a fast-growing tree like a ficus can be repotted every 1, 2, 3 years, depending on how soon it fills out the pot. But a very old tree like a pine, say a pine that's 75 or 100 years old, they don't like their roots disturbed, so you want to do maybe every 5 or 7 or even 10 years between repottings. It just depends on the material you're working with.
And you mentioned root trimming. What tempts people to do root trimming?
Well, people think that trimming the roots off is what keeps the plants small. It's not that important. It's more of a thing to shorten the roots, makes the roots branch out, makes the root system more efficient, and it helps the tree to survive in the small pot. And also, when you root prune, you make room for new soil, because a lot of times we put them right back in the same pot that they were in. So you need to remove some of the roots to make room for new soil.
Mm-hmm.
But when you trim the roots, actually what happens is the top of the plant grows, because you get new root activity, which puts a lot more energy into the plant and causes a lot of growth in the top of the tree. So instead of keeping it dwarf, it actually makes it grow.
Ah. And those tips, I've got the Dan's top 10 tips for taking care of bonsai on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. A couple of things before I let you go. I wanted to mention that your arch rivals are also having a bonsai exhibit. That is the Mid-America Bonsai Exhibit at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Now, that's a little later on, August 15th to 17th.
That's 2 weeks after us.
Yeah. So do you do like rugby scrums and line them with bonsai and then, you know?
Well, I don't know. The Morton Arboretum is having a sumo wrestling thing this year, so.
I like the idea of bonsai guys in sumo wrestling gear. Duking it out. But actually, it's just another one of the groups in the Midwest.
Yeah. They're the older group.
You're the upstarts.
We've only been around since the 70s.
And how long have they been around?
I think since the 60s or something.
Oh, okay. It's not that different, really.
This year we will have a tree display at our show with about 60 or so trees, which belong to the members. There'll be demonstrations going on so people can watch. We'll have two demonstrations a day so people can watch and see how the bonsai is actually created from stock material. There'll be vendors there selling material so they can help you, members available to answer questions. And this year we're very honored because we're bringing in Walter Paul from Germany, and Walter is a world-renowned bonsai master. So he's a very highly placed, very honored person in bonsai circles. And we're really happy to have him coming to our show. And we'll be leading off the show by having Walter Paul and Jim Doyle from Nature's Way Nursery in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. They will be leading off the show doing a bonsai demonstration on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock in the morning. So that'll be the first big event, really, of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to see a master work on a tree? That's a good thing.
Now here's the question: Does a master work faster or slower?
Usually slower.
That's what I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. It's like being in a time warp or something. You know, with the master just slows down. In fact, you can't even discern whether he's breathing.
Well, you're studying the tree.
That's the Prairie State Bonsai Society annual show. It is part, as I said, of Destination Asia Summer Festival at the Morton Arboretum. All the links are on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. And then the 37th annual Mid-America Bonsai Exhibit at the Chicago Botanic Garden is August 15th through 17th. And the links are there for that. Now, since I have you on the line, I know you love bonsai, but you're also, you do all the other stuff as well, horticulturally. And I just wanted to chat just a little bit about what you're seeing out there in this summer of 2014. I talked earlier about tomatoes seem to be a little slow and peppers and that sort of thing.
Diseases are rampant, especially fungal diseases. I'm getting people every day bringing in stuff and showing me, and it'd be fungal leaf spots or root rots or various things like that. There's been a lot of insect problems. Cottony cushion scale on magnolia all of a sudden is showing up, which I haven't seen for quite a while. A lot of aphid damage on things.
I was at Uncommon Ground yesterday, and they had aphid damage on their currant plants, but only the red currant. The black currant didn't have any aphid damage at all.
Different species. So
well, of course, and different chemicals and insects respond to. The berries were very tart, and one of the things that Farmer Jen told us to do was grab the leaves and get a sense of the scent. And she said that's probably what keeps the aphids at bay.
That's part of it. They recognize things that they want to go to.
Yeah, and don't want to go to.
Right.
Last week I had an interesting observation. I read from the plant health care report of the Morton Arboretum about the effects of the rain we've had this year, and you're talking about some of them now, which is fungal diseases and certain insect pressure. One of the things they talked about were cankers on plants, and that can be a dark spot, it can be a lesion, it can be different things. And in the middle of the week, I've been meaning to do this for a long time. I have this rose bush out in front and the parkway, and it's really overgrown its bounds. So I hacked it back. I mean, and more than a third, folks, they tell you not to do this, but I didn't care because I know I'm not going to kill it. And I wanted to open it up, and I really hacked it back. And as I was looking at the canes on the rose bush, they were covered in lesions, in cankers. It was just amazing. And I think it had something to do, two things, with the fact that we've had so much moisture and the fact that there wasn't enough air circulation, so I was probably doing the right thing.
And stress from the last few years, because we've had some really hot, dry summers, which damaged the roots. We've had this very, very cold winter, which sent the frost very deep. Now a lot of moisture, which is rotting any roots that are weak. So a lot of those things are just accumulations of the last few years' weather problems.
And I can't stress that enough, that folks, if you're seeing damage in a tree, in a shrub, it often has to do with the last 5 years. It's not what happened a month ago, okay? No, because these things are cumulative, and that's what the plant health report said last week, is that you have to pay attention to when we've had drought, when we've had too much rain, just all the different conditions, the cold. I mean, it's been a triple threat over the last 3 years. We started with drought, we had abnormal rain last year, and then we had this ridiculous cold over the winter. Well, some of those plants are feeling it right now. I mean, you mentioned to me that, my Cornus mass, which is a Cornelian cherry dogwood, leafed out, and for the first time ever, I can see the branches. Usually the leaves are so large they cover all the branches. The leaves are small this year, and I'm wondering if it's that cumulative effect.
Oh, sure. That's what it is. Just the stress from the last few years.
Yeah. Well, Dan, always a pleasure. You got to go back to work.
Well, next Sunday morning, people should be listening to the Mike Novak Show on their way to driving to the Arboretum. And when they get there at 11 o'clock in the morning, I will be doing a demonstration on a ficus tree so they can watch me at work.
Oh, I didn't realize you were doing a demonstration.
Yes, I'm doing the demonstration on Sunday at 11 in the morning. I'm also leading a workshop on Jabota kaba, which is a tropical tree, in the afternoon on Saturday. That's 1:30 in the afternoon. And there are still a few spaces available in the workshop. If people want to sign up, they can go to the Arboretum website and sign up for the workshops there.
You can always go to my website as well. I've got the links to right at the top of this week's show where it says Annual Bonsai Show. Click on that. It has a list of workshops, but I also have the link to the Morton Arboretum, so you can do it either way.
Yeah, well, sign up for workshops is done completely through the Arboretum, not through the club.
Okay.
So they have to go there to sign up.
All right, great. Oh, that's good to know. You can find the list of workshops through the club, but to sign up, you have to go to the Morton Arboretum. Dan Costa.
Has the list of them.
What's that?
It's also at the Arboretum as well.
Okay. I think we have enough links for them to peruse and find their way along.
Mm-hmm.
Always great having you on the show, Dan, and thanks so much. He's at Vern Goer's Greenhouse. I got a link to that there in Hinsdale. Stop by and harass him someday.
Yeah. And come out and enjoy the show, enjoy the Asian festival. There'll be food trucks there as well with Asian cuisine, so you can have some of that type of thing if you'd like. Listen to some Asian music. The Japanese, Chinese, and Javanese music playing, drummers going on. So there's a lot going on this weekend. It's going to be quite a big show.
Great. Well, I appreciate you taking the time in the middle of your busy bonsai day. So I will talk to you later, Dan.
And thank you for giving us the time to talk about it.
My pleasure. Have a great Sunday.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In the Green Room.
You dig.
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com, right in your own backyard.
I just noticed that Mr. Brown Thumb retweeted, check out the 37th annual Mid-America Bonsai Exhibit at Chicago Botanic Garden. Hey, Mr. BT, I just spent 20 minutes talking to Dan about the other show, okay? Now tweet that one as well, too, okay? All right, dude? I'm always amazed when folks don't know the name of a good independent garden center near where they live, especially when they live in and around Chicago. That's why Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is such an important resource. The July-August issue has an article called Glorious Gardens of the Midwest, which not only features great garden centers like the Hidden Gardens in Willowbrook, Hornbaker Gardens in Princeton, and Rich's Fox Willow Pines in Woodstock. By the way, I'm going to be doing a book signing up there on August 23rd, just letting you know. But lovely public gardens, such as Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, Fernwood Botanical Garden and Nature Preserve in Niles, Michigan, and Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary in 2014. If you're listening and wonder why you've never heard of these places, you should pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, which is available at locations all over Chicago. You might even stumble onto my column on the inside back page, a very well-kept secret for 11 years. Get yourself a subscription, dudes and dudettes. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakenings, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakenings features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Welcome to a beautiful Sunday morning. Let's welcome in for the second week in a row Pat Skatch, who is the Cooperative Weather Observer with the National Weather Service in Chicago and Climate Research Contributor with the College of DuPage Meteorology Department. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Very good, very good.
You told me you were going to talk a little bit about 90-degree days or lack thereof in 2014.
Yes, exactly. We've had a very few number of 90-degree days so far this year, and I wanted to take a look at Midway Airport's data going back to 1928, because that location really hasn't changed as the official stations have throughout the years, going back to 1871.
All right, can I give you just 2 seconds here, Pat? Do you have? I'm sure you have opinions about this. It's just weird that you have official locations, and if you bump them around, then how do you have consistency in the records that you keep? And, you know, when you say we have a record high or a record low, well, if it's at O'Hare now, and, you know, for all practical purposes, O'Hare's out in the country compared to Midway, those are really two different locations.
They are. And, in fact, you know, what's even, I don't want to say worse, but it is, was when they were taking the observations downtown next to the lake. However, we have to remember, though, you know, this was all farmland back in, you know, the 1870s and so forth, and at that point in time. So,
well, even before then, it was all swamp,
right,
and savanna, depending on where you were in the area.
Right, but I agree with you, Mike. I mean, to keep changing locations, it's not consistent. It really isn't.
It's odd. I kind of, you know, as a guy who lives in the city, when I hear the Midway temps and the statistics, I go, okay, that's the official. I'm considering that the official because I'm in the city, and that's what it feels like to me in the city of Chicago. But
and you're not alone. Most people are really already trending to go with that school of thought.
Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so far this year, O'Hare has only 3 90-degree days. Midway has only 7 90-degree days. We're going to concentrate on Midway Airport. Only 13 past years, or 15% of the past 86 years, have had so few 90-degree days at Midway Airport. Now, this study, Mike, is from May 1st through July 31st for all years. And I'm going out to July 31st because we really have no 90-degree days in the forecast through the end of the month. The average number of 90-degree days from May 1st through July 31st is 15 days. Therefore, we have less than half so far of what we typically would have.
Mm.
The overall average number of 90-degree days for the entire year or summer is 24, so we're about a third. Of the past 13 years which had a few or fewer 90-degree days, 8 years or 62% went on to produce less than the average number of 90-degree days. Only 38% went on to produce more than the average number of 90-degree days. So far, looking at that, we might have a short-lived 90-degree summer, possibly.
Wow.
Once again, examining the past 13 years with the fewer 90-degree days, the 86-year average last date of a 90-degree day is September the 6th. Only 4 years, or 31% of these 13 past years, experienced their last 90-degree day for that year past the September 6th average date. 69% of those past 13 years experienced their last 90-degree day prior to September 6th. So again, a second study is basically almost indicating we're going to have a shortened number.
So the pattern sets itself, and then it's, you know, nature gives up after a while, eh?
Statistically speaking, yes. That's possibly going to happen. So,
yeah.
Now, our first 90-degree day this year occurred on May 8th. The 86-year average first date is May 28th. We're actually 3 weeks earlier this year. When I examined the criteria going back again for the 86 years, only 3 years or 23% of these past 13 years experienced their first 90-degree day. Respective to that period prior to May 8th, 77% experienced their first 90-degree days after that date. So it's sort of lopsided, Mike. I looked at this two different ways, going on the first 90-degree day. That sort of is off kilter, but making up for it in the end seems to make sense where we're going to have a shortened period.
Yeah, we got it early, but it sounds like it was really an anomaly at that time.
Exactly. Yes, it was just a strange coincidence, but all indications are, and I think Rick's going to feel the same way, I don't think we're going to see that big of a stretch of 90-degree days past August.
Well, that doesn't bode well for our tomatoes.
Okay.
I don't know if you care, but I care.
Well, you know something, though, Mike? You know, that's a threshold of 90-degree days, okay? In fact, when I was talking about O'Hare and Midway, having three 90s at O'Hare and seven 90s at Midway, the reason for the difference was O'Hare had several 89s.
Ah.
1 degree off.
That's true. And, getting back to tomatoes, and then I have to, unfortunately, get you to your forecast, it also has to do with overnight temperatures. It's the overnight lows have a huge effect on it.
Oh, they will, absolutely.
Yeah. And I need to look up those numbers and find out what is the optimum time for that. But it has a lot to do with overnight lows. So let's get into the forecast for this week. You said no more 90s before the end of the month. That means through Thursday. So what are we looking at?
Today we have a slight chance of an isolated shower during the day today and possibly this evening. The Weather Service is even saying that it could be an isolated thunderstorm, but a lot of dry hours throughout the day. We're going to have a high temperature, about 83 degrees. Winds are going to make it feel quite breezy this afternoon and through early this evening. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low temperature around 61 degrees. Wind speeds diminish slightly, however, still continued breezy. Monday, mostly sunny skies, high temperature near 74. Clearing skies overnight Monday night, low temperature around 57 degrees. And then Tuesday through Friday, each day includes a very slight chance of a shower. Likelihood is minimal. Daytime temperatures in the upper 70s, overnight low temperatures in the low 60s. We'll be below average through the week.
That's amazing stuff. Wow, it just continues. Pat Skatch, it's been great having you for the past couple of weeks. And as always, keep in touch, and we always pay attention to what you send us.
Thank you, Mike. It was my pleasure.
All right, have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Second hour, will the techies take over the world? And will they help us solve our social problems? Stick around.
The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
That's what I get. I'm geeking out on radio stuff here. But, you know, sometimes I do live in my own little world, my own little radio world. But I'll send out a shout out to my buddy Tom Neufeld, who I think is listening. I don't know if he is. First of all, I'm thinking about you. He had a tough week. And I just want to tell you that I just hit the post, and it was quite by accident. I have nothing to do with it. But that does happen occasionally by coincidence. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. Derek Eater, you sent me an email. Am I supposed to be looking at this? Did I miss something
here?
Oh,
no, that was just me saying that.
You're outside.
I was here.
Okay.
And I'm here.
Okay, good. You know, it's sometimes I don't get – I've got – my email here and Facebook and Twitter and the commercials here and the website stuff here, and it's all happening at this, and the phone lines, and looking across to Helen and looking across to Carol, And as I tell people, it's like piloting the space shuttle.
It's like the Mike Novak command center.
It is, exactly, except it's just me. There's I have my lovely assistants here, and they're wonderful, and they're out in the Twitter sphere and the Facebook machine and doing all that stuff. It's great to have you on the show. Before I get to you, I want to let folks know of a couple of events, because Helen is really good at putting these together, and we're trying to figure out a way to get them on the website so that we can have as many out there. But I see that The Plant, are you familiar with The Plant?
I have heard about it, yes.
Yeah, you should go down there.
Yeah,
it's
I'd
on
like
the south too. Side. It's really cool. They're having an aquaponics, a DIY aquaponics workshop. And participants will assemble a 3-gallon tabletop system, which makes a great home for 1 to 2 goldfish and up to 3 herbs, such as cilantro, parsley, and mint. And if you're going to grow mint, grow it in a tank. It's like if you put it in your yard, it'll take over your garage. It'll invade your basement. The system includes pluming. I wonder if that's plumbing, supposed to be plumbing. I would assume plumbing. Water and air pumps. It says pluming. Water and air pumps, a water testing kit, plants, net pots, wood frame, and a 5-gallon aquarium. And participants will need to provide their own fish. It's next Saturday, 2 to 4 p.m., for $175, includes $75 in materials. And it's at 1400 West 47th Street at the Plant Chicago, which is just that wonderful multi-use area, net positive energy. And do you pronounce your last name Eater or Eater? Eater?
Eater, yes.
It is Eater. Okay, good. Derek Eater is, this is the kind of thing that should appeal to you because these are people who are looking at a problem and solving it. I hate to use the phrase outside the box because everybody uses that. But they kind of are. They're approaching it from a different dimension, maybe, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. a way of looking at it. So that's going on at Plant Chicago. And then the following Saturday, they're having what they're calling a monster food truck rally. I kind of like that idea. Chicago's first vertical farm and food business incubator, which is how they describe themselves, is once again hosting the city's finest food trucks for a great day of Southside fun at its third annual food truck rally. That's 11 to 3 on August 9th at 1400 West 47th Street. I think you can go to, and by the way, all proceeds directly benefit the mission and programming of Plant Chicago, NFP, 501c3 nonprofit organization with a mission to promote closed loop food production and sustainable economic development through education and research. So you might want to get that information. Here's a phone number if you need it, 773-847-5523. If you don't get that quickly enough, I'm sure that it'll be up on Facebook and Twitter in no time because Carol and Helen are working on that. I think you can also go to Plant Chicago. Is it .org or .? We'll find out in a second. Let's do it right now.
.com.
.com. Thank you. See how quickly people were saying, these are my people. You,
also,
Derek.
Pluming is a word.
Is it? But is it the right word for that?
Yeah, not plumbing isn't.
Well, but it's an aquaponic system. Isn't there plumbing involved?
I don't know, maybe. But pluming is spread out in a shape resembling a feather.
Which I am doing right now.
They can't see that.
I know. We need cameras. Derek, make
I
it
happen. I can take a picture. I can take a picture.
Okay, take a picture of me pluming, okay?
I'm not that fast, so right, hold your plume.
I'm holding the pose. Assume the
this
position.
Is great,
wait,
radio.
Wait, pluming. Oh, yes. There we are. I am pluming.
Oh, my gosh. He's so pluming. All right, we're posting pluming.
Okay.
Derek, did you want to post your own pluming pose?
I'm okay, but if you think it'll help.
He's all right. He doesn't need to
I'd
plume.
Be happy to help out.
That is Derek Eater, who has his own website, which is DEREKEDER, DerekEder.com. I met him at a place called OpenGov Hack Night. And I have to admit, I was, you know, a little concerned about showing up at this thing because I have a reputation and everything. And then I show up and there's people crowded into this little room and spilling out into the halls. And it's at this place. I don't know if you were listening earlier when I told folks that it was at 1871.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their very oh-so-slick website. But, you know,
slick, yes.
Yeah, well, because they're techies, right?
Sure, yeah, that's what it's all about.
What is 1871, and why is it the host to OpenGov Hack Night?
So 1871 is a tech incubator space downtown in the Merchandise Mart here in Chicago. And it is a place for, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, on the order of around 200 different startups are in this space. And it's meant specifically for new technology startups, small companies, maybe one to two person companies, just sort of trying out new technology ideas and trying out new business ideas. And it's very much aligns with what we do at the OpenGov Hack Night, which is the kind of the intersection of technology and civics and government and municipal information. The space is actually a pretty big draw, I would say, as far as getting people to come to the event. A lot of people have heard about 1871, and there's this kind of cool factor to it. So it's a great host for it. We've been there for, man, over 2 years now.
I know, and I seem to be the last person in Chicago to have figured this out. I looked at your media, and everybody in the world has reported on this except me.
It's kind of crazy how we haven't really sought out media, but just due to the fact that it's every week and that we kind of keep churning out new ideas and new apps from this community, different people, and actually journalists are actually, well, like some of the people that come every week.
Well, I was there.
Right.
I mean, I was kind of showing up under several auspices. One was this show. But the other was as president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition somebody had said, well, we might do a recycling app.
Right, yeah. So that's a recent development. So the history of the event is it started about 2 years ago, and it was just four of us who were interested in working with open data that the city of Chicago had released. And we decided that it was something that we were doing in our spare time outside of our 9-to-5 working hours. And so we needed a place to get together every week to work on this stuff because it was just getting annoying to schedule everybody. So we just started meeting at the same time and same place, and it turned out that a lot of other people had the same interests as us, and it sort of grew organically. And now we're like 70 to 80 people, and we've pretty much outgrown the room we're currently
exactly.
in right now. So,
and I can't imagine. I know you bring in food when you do this, which is really one of the cool things about it.
I mean, it is held during the dinner hour, so it's a good thing to
provide. Like 6 o'clock usually.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
It made me think when I was there, is there enough food for everybody? I'm not sure you have enough for everybody at the moment.
Yeah, we try to keep up with the number of people that show up. So we ask people to RSVP, but not everybody does. And so it just kind of, it's every week is kind of a guess as to how many people are going to show up and making sure we get enough food. We have sponsors to handle that, which is nice. It's run on a volunteer basis. There's no entity or organization behind it. It's really just a community. And we've sort of, like I said, grown organically. And as we added more people, we needed to get, we decided to start paying for food. And
but
that
somebody
got expensive.
Has to... organize some of this.
Right. I mean, I do most of that. Also, Christopher Whitaker is another organizer for the event. And it's something that it doesn't take that much time. Actually, that's one of the goals, my goals of the event is to minimize the amount of effort it takes to set it up every week. We have presenters that come in, but they typically reach out to us at this point. And we send out an email to everybody. And then everything else is just sort of on autopilot, right? It's in the same space, same time.
And it helps that you've got a sponsor like 1871.
Yeah, right.
And a clubhouse. Amazing. You know, a clubhouse right. for an organization. I can't tell you how many not-for-profits I've been involved with over the course of my life. And one of the biggest barriers to making them work is having a clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can meet regularly and be welcome.
Yeah, I mean, we're working in the digital world with making digital apps, but there's nothing that you can nothing replaces that physical interaction.
Yeah, talking face to face.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, and I think that's a really good point that in this world we have, in a lot of ways, we have started to skip the face to face thing. Especially if somebody's on the West Coast and somebody's on the East Coast, yeah, you can Skype and you can email and you can do all that, but there is something. There's an energy. Mm-hmm. About working together.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, the key word working, right? That is another sort of differentiator between our group and say, other sort of monthly meetups or weekly meetups, is the goal of the group is to actually try to get a group together and try to build something. And in doing that with a group of collaborators, you're able to make new connections. You're able to sort of interact with people in a way that you wouldn't otherwise, and just sort of if it was just a conversation.
And meet people that you wouldn't otherwise
absolutely.
Because they're in
yeah.
different disciplines.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Okay. How old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay, you're a little older than... Good. I'm glad you're not like 22.
Actually, wait, I'm 31. I'm going to be 32 soon. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. You youngsters. They always
you know, I
average up.
The,
yeah. Oh, I really am 32.
Well, whenever I have a birthday, I forget... For a while, it's hard. Like you forget. You go, yeah, I'm whatever I was. So I'm trying to get ahead of that.
Mm-hmm. But here's the problem: we're being told that our youth don't care about civic activities and they don't engage. You're the lie to that. Okay, you're the antithesis of that because you have engaged big time. In a way that could possibly change everything, change the way our government works, change the way social structures work. Do you see this as a new paradigm for politics?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. And so, I mean, my story actually, you know, I've always had an interest in politics and civics. I volunteered for the 2008 Obama campaign. And I sort of had an interest in the side on political things. It was never really Chicago focused. I always felt that was sort of hard to access. But then all of a sudden in 2011, when we got a new mayor, Mayor Emanuel, they decided to have an open data policy, which means that they actually took data that had been sort of stored away in government silos for, you know, sometimes decades, and actually released that data in the open for anybody to use for free. And when that happened, it enabled a whole new group of people to have an interaction with the city that was not there before. We have all sorts of data that's available now on crime reports. There's a set of data on the data portal, the Chicago data portal, which is data.cityofchicago.org, that has every single crime reported to the Chicago Police Department since 2001. And this is something on the order of like 5.5 to 6 million crimes with information about where it happened, when it happened, what kind of crime it was. There's information about lobbying. There's information about energy use.
And yet, there are still those who say there's all this data that's out there and we still can't find out who has access to the mayor's office.
Right. Yeah. So therein lies like a little bit of it's hard, right? It's hard to release all this data. And right now it's very much...
But some people say that the problem is that you send all this data out and it makes people think, ooh, and then they get distracted by,
sure.
Oh, look, a butterfly. And they go searching through this data that, as you said, has been sitting around gathering dust. And yet the stuff that's right in front of them is not so transparent. I was reading an article that was actually reporting on what you're doing there. Mm-hmm. And they talked about that. It was, yeah, we've got this data here, but it's still not really a transparent government. How do you reconcile those two?
Right. So there's a good saying that sort of addresses this topic really well, which is oftentimes when reporters have been the leaders in sort of getting data out of governments for a long time. There's taking advantage of freedom of information requests, and that local media is still doing that really well. A saying that really I think does a good job of getting at this point is that oftentimes when reporters ask for data about a particular topic, governments can oftentimes sort of squelch the investigation by just dumping the data on them, saying like, here you go, here's everything, right? And it's
right.
overwhelming, right?
Yes.
There's just so much data that you can't even figure in, like, they, and, you know, knowing that reporters don't have a lot of time and a lot of technical resources, typically they're going to maybe not have the time to go, like, sift through all that data. What's changing now, though, is the tools that are available to dive into that data, right? I think that governments typically are going to, since they're the ones leading the initiative of releasing the data, they're going to release what's easiest for them to release first, which in many ways makes sense, I think. And it's up to us as the community to keep pushing them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one way to do that is also to encourage them and sort of, I would actually say, and applaud them for doing what they already do, right? They have released this crime data. They have released this other data. And we've since made all sorts of different applications with that data. That's an important step to take to say, look, the work that you've already done, the time you've invested in releasing this data is yielding these positive results. It's important to do that, but at the same time, keep pushing, right? And, mm-hmm. You know, there's a reporter at the Chicago Tribune, I think it's David Kidwell, and this is his issue, right? The issue of transparency around the mayor's office. Mm-hmm. And it's something.
Well, a lot of them, yeah. I mean, you just pick up a Chicago Reader and look at Mick Dumke and Ben Jarofsky, who, by the way, just won an award for their investigative journalism. Congratulations to them. But they are among the people that – but it seems that there's not enough because, mm-hmm. it, as you pointed out, it's really hard to get through the clutter and figure out what is the information that is really going to help you.
True. And that's one of the focuses and one of the points of the Hack Night, right, of the OpenGov Hack Night. It is a place for people to really look at this data and try to make sense of it because data never speaks for itself. You have to do research.
You
have to talk to people. You have to figure out how it was created. You have to figure out why it was created. You have to figure out where there are flaws in it. And only then, after doing a ton of really – there's no way to automate that away. You have to just do sort of the hard – work of
so some of it is not okay. And what is your background, by the way?
I'm a web developer. So I went to for computer engineering, and I've been a web developer for about 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's Derek Eater with Open City and OpenGov Hack Night. You throw the word hack in there,
that the word that scared
that's the
you?
Word. Yeah, that's the word that scares me. Okay, and it's not really. It's basically you're taking information that is public information, but you made it sound sexy.
So the word hack is something that has been it has a bunch of different meanings depending on who you ask. There's, you know, the maybe the negative one is like, oh, a computer hacker, someone who's trying to do ill or to, you know, steal your information. The other definition for hack is to come up with a clever solution to something in a technical way. And that is very much in the spirit of what we're trying to do. We're taking this government data that's been released and we're trying to build something that's new, right? Approach it in a way that hadn't been tried before. And using that as a way to innovate in this area and not only come up with cool applications that are useful for citizens, but also in many ways we're feeding back into the city. They are taking some of these ideas themselves and incorporating them into what they do. So it's very much an engine of innovation that's going on, not so much trying to take anybody's
money. It's just a little bit on the edge there, a little edgy enough
it's new, right? It's green fields, right? This is something that, frankly, wasn't around in America 3-4 years ago. And it is because of this open data that's available, right? And it's because of that this community has sprung up. And obviously there's a lot of people that have done a lot of amazing work here in our community. But the real catalyst was the fact that there's data when there wasn't before. That's the thing that changed, right? I was already here, right? I already cared about the things I cared about. Now I have this data to work with, and it's sort of spun me off in this crazy trajectory of doing all this civic technology stuff.
I want to get to the various apps that you have worked on, and you seem to be among the group, the principal guy who's just out there coming up with app after app, transit future, an interactive map about how getting better transit in Cook County. The one I talked about on this show several weeks ago, I don't know if you know that, but I mentioned the Is There Sewage in the Chicago River?
I had a feeling you would probably be interested in that.
I did. That was an interesting one, especially when we had that Monday night rain event and then a bunch of places were pouring sewage into the Chicago River. I went to your app and went, oh, yeah, this is where it's happening. Yeah. Chicago Council-matic.
Yep.
That's just, are you curious about what legislation the Chicago City Council has been passing?
Are you?
Everybody should be. you can figure that out. You find that out from there. Second City Zoning, an interactive map that lets you find out how your building is zoned. Learn where to locate your business and explore zoning. Now, a lot of people aren't interested in zoning, but some people are. Mm-hmm. Crime in Chicago. Crime in Chicago. It lets you explore crime trends in the 50 wards. And again, as you said, this is all stuff that's available at data.cityofchicago.org.
Yeah, the data is. These are individual apps that are on their own website.
So right, right, right.
When you
I
said
meant
that
the data
my website is,
yes.
is DerekEter.com. That is like one of, you know, dozens at this point.
You know, so, dude, you got to focus here, okay? Let's focus.
I'm all about making – so I worked on just about all of those apps. I didn't work on Transit Future because
But you worked on a bunch of these.
Sure, yes. And so Open City is really it's a collective of people that build these kinds of apps with open data. It's a banner that we release things under. And each one of them has its own sort of individual focus, right? Where each one, as you can tell, is very focused on you know, either zoning or crime or is there sewage in the Chicago River. If you look at the opencityapps.org website, which is where all these are listed, you can kind of see like a chronology of all the work we've done over the last
years. I've got the link to Open City on my website. Go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. I've got a link to OpenGov Hack Night and 1871 and Open City and a bunch of these apps that they – I didn't put them all because there's so many. And you can explore for yourself. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. I see we've got a call. Let's take a call for you. David, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, greetings, Mike, from San Francisco. And I just noticed that the marathon is running right underneath my window, so every once in a while you hear a hoot.
Well, you're not going anywhere then, because you can't even cross the street when the marathon is running.
Oh, sometimes, yeah. But luckily enough, coffee's behind me. So, hey, you know, I wanted to ask, it sounds like you're talking about like hazardous waste lawsuits, and it crosses my mind. In typical law, you know, a person is innocent until proven guilty. But in the case of pollution, you know, you're basically dealing with whether a chemical is considered innocent until proven guilty. And the way these corporations have been getting away with murder is they make every individual prove that a chemical is innocent until proven guilty. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of a performance bond that can be mandated for chemicals that are kind of obvious, you know, if somebody's dealing with lead or benzene or, you know, toluene or all sorts of horrible chemicals on a regular basis, their neighbors are getting injured. Whether or not performance bonds are somewhat the answer to prevent these lawsuits from coming up in the first place.
Well, that seems a little bit of a tangent to what Derek does. How would you interpret this in terms of how you would collect data, Derek?
So we don't collect too much data on that.
Is it data or data? What are we going to go with?
Oh, it's either either one. It's actually challenging to collect information from legal documents as far as that goes. So I don't really have too much insight into this particular issue, other than knowing that in Chicago, the app that you talked about earlier, Is There Sewage in the Chicago River, it monitors whenever sewage that is collected in the Chicago's combined sewer overflow system overflows into the Chicago River. And in that sewage is a bunch of different things, which they all measure. And so there is some information about what kinds of things get dumped into the river, but it's actually, in some cases, it's hard to know exactly what it is.
But the point is, you have to have the raw data to be able to even right. create something.
Sure.
So if what I would say to you, David, is if they're not providing it, and if a chemical company or an entity or a municipality is not providing that raw data, there's nothing that a guy like Derek can really do.
You can sometimes go try to get it yourself, but that's hard, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to, you know, having the access to being able to gather that data on your own. But yeah, I mean, oftentimes the applications that we build are limited by what the raw resources we have available, which is this open data.
David, great. I appreciate you calling in, and enjoy the marathon. Have a great Sunday.
Yeah, no trouble. But what was the specialty that you work on?
I'm not sure which. Well, the specialty, he's doing all kinds of civic apps. And, like I mentioned earlier, it can be about crime. It can be about what the city council's passing. Mm-hmm. It could be about sewage. It can be about transit.
Oh, I see, like statistical management of government.
Exactly. And putting right. it in perspective and allowing people to take that and run with it.
We've got an Open Records Act out here, and we actually try to do that out here, but it just depends on whether or not they budget it or whether or not the mayor slightly defunds certain aspects.
Yeah.
Because as we're noticing, we're having this huge problem of overgrowth. The cranes everywhere. They're building skyscrapers like crazy, and there's not enough rentals. So we're going to end up with empty skyscrapers.
All right.
Everywhere.
Well, that's a really good point. I think there's a place where you could take the data on how much new construction there mm-hmm. is versus rehab versus mm-hmm. something else, and say here are the raw numbers, and this is how we might address this issue, and that maybe that's something you could do.
Yeah, and actually, there's you said you're calling in from San Francisco. There's a ton of people that are doing this exact same thing in San Francisco. There's a group out there called Code for America, and they take data just like we do from cities and governments and other municipalities, and they build different applications with them. So I would invite you to go try to connect with them and try to connect with there's a San Francisco Code for America Brigade, is what they call themselves, and there's also an Oakland Brigade. And so if you look those groups up, they have weekly Hack Night events just like we do, and they meet every week and work on different applications. So a lot of the stuff about the built environment is very fascinating. It's very complicated. Some of the data is available. Some of it isn't. But there's a ton of value in knowing what's going on.
David, thank you for your contribution. Have a great Sunday. 773-763-9278. I see we got another call, but I need to take care of some biz. We will be back with Derek Eder from OpenGov Hack Night and Open City and his own website. And he's got tons of them, folks. It's just, you know, Google him. He's everywhere. He's everywhere on the planet. All right. In February of 2014, while Chicago was experiencing one of the harshest winters on record, Christy Weber, president of Christy Weber Landscapes, gathered her staff of landscape designers, horticulturists, and local gardeners on the city's west side to design the annual display beds for Millennium Park. In a brave and bold move, a team that consisted of a local landscape contractor, a West Side permaculture expert, and an activist for urban farming collaborated to create Millennium Park's first ever public permaculture display. 5 months later, her team harvested 7 pounds of cilantro and donated it to Inspiration Kitchens chef David Rosen. On Facebook, Christy Weber posted, "Bayless, eat your heart out. Wouldn't you love to say you're using food from Millennium at your restaurants?" Now, of course, that's all in fun, but the permaculture display features all kinds of edibles, and it's for real. 2 weeks from now, on this very show, Christy stops by with permaculturist Anna Marie Leon and Westtown Academy's Angela Taylor to talk about how they made it happen. Meanwhile, find her on Facebook or go to ChristyWeber.com. Christy Weber Landscapes, right in your own backyard.
In 1979, the American Community Gardening Association was formed in Chicago to provide leadership and advocacy for the community garden movement. Join us August 7th through 10th at the Field Museum as we celebrate the 35th anniversary of ACGA at our annual conference. Thursday, August 7th, starts with a pre-conference at Cam Isaiah Israel, focusing on gleaning and food pantry gardens, followed by a farm fresh welcome and networking dinner. Friday is a day full of workshops, roundtables, and keynotes, followed by an epic garden soiree and silent auction at the historic Garfield Park Community
Conservatory. Saturday, we're in for a national networking event, presentations, and an afternoon of tours of some of the most vibrant community gardens the city has to offer. Sunday concludes the conference with a second-story performance of Voices from the Community Garden, highlighting personal experiences of how Chicago community gardens change lives. Don't miss this historic event. Join us August 7th through 10th for the American Community Gardening Association Conference and be part of the vision for the next 35 years. For more information, communitygarden.org.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. In the studio with me, and I'm very pleased to have him here, is Derek Eder with OpenGov Hack Night. And by the way, playing Girls Just Want to Have Fun. The thing that popped in my head is Geeks Just Want to Have Fun. And I bet you've been called that once or twice in your life.
Yeah, sure.
Oh wait, I better turn that on.
Yes, I have, but I embrace it.
You should. I'm a geek too, but I'm more a geek about the world, you know, like soil and microorganisms. Don't laugh at me, Carol.
Okay. No, I'm not. I tell my daughter that she should date geeks. That's eventually. Forget the jocks, go right to the geeks.
Go for the geeks. And I noted.
Live long and may the force be with you.
All right. Do I get to play this then for no particular reason?
Attack of a killer asparagus.
Okay, let's go back to that. Mud Baron on Twitter. What? I'm sorry, I'm out of control. Mud Baron wrote, he quotes me and says, Mike now states in this time of apps and high tech that, quote, face-to-face contact is magic. There, take that, Facebook. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but, and I'm not sure I said that exactly. Before I get to Frank, we'll do in a second, a couple of things. Talk very briefly about these apps that you have. You worked on Is There Sewage in the Chicago River?
Mm-hmm.
And you got that information from the MWRD?
Yes, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. So they actually have a page on their website that notifies whenever a combined sewer overflow event, so CSO, not the not the kind
not the orchestra.
Yeah, not the kind you listen to. Yeah. Happens, and they have a map of what rivers are affected in the Cook County region, and so we saw this and thought, well, this is like really like kind of like a gross thing that's happening. Not yes. a lot of people know that it's happening. So we did what we could to make that more, get the word out about that. So we made this app to basically take that same data and make it very simple and easy for people to understand. So when you go to isthereSewageInTheChicagoRiver.com, right now it'll have a big blue no.
Right.
But when it's a yes, it says yes, and it shows you a map of where it happens. And then we also have...
But it doesn't tell you exactly how much, does it?
Right. So that's hard, right? That's something that that we do not have the data on that as far as how much sewage is even coming out of these pipes, these combined sewer overflow locations. And in fact, we're still trying to figure out where the outflow locations actually are on the river. We have a general sense about what river segments are affected, but we actually do not know yet where exactly these pipes are. And so we'd like to know more precisely where these things are happening.
Yeah. And have you heard from the MWRD?
Actually, yeah. We've had a couple conversations with them, and they are aware of our application, and they think it's interesting. So we're actually in talks with them right now to potentially get some of this more precise data.
That's great. See, yeah. And what's impressive is that folks have responded in a positive way. I was going to ask you also, you know, have you heard from the city of Chicago? Have they sent out feelers? Are they trying to co-opt you? Are they trying to hire you, get you on in to work on stuff?
So there are many people from the city of Chicago that attend the OpenGov Hack Night. In fact, there are several.
Yeah, there were people
regulars.
When I was there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so we consider ourselves independent of the city. We kind of like to stay in this sort of outsider kind of position because sometimes we make apps that are really like make the city look great, and sometimes they're, you know, they're very positive, and sometimes we also make applications that maybe aren't so positive, and we want to have it's positive in terms of, like, you know, from the perspective of the city government.
I got one for you. I got one for you because I know the EPA is monitoring the Petcoke dust mm-hmm. on the southeast side. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if the EPA would have open data for you that you could create a Petcoke app. And my friends at the Southeast Environmental Task Force would be very interested in mm-hmm. something that they can post in real time. And that's part of their problem. It's hard to get the stuff in real time.
Yeah, that's a real challenge. The Illinois EPA website does have some data available on it. Although I haven't looked to see if they have any Petcoke data.
I may give you a call about that one,
hey,
or shoot you a message.
Yeah, please do.
And see what I can find out. Because I would love to see that app.
Or come to the Hack Night and
suggest it.
And be part of a team to build it.
That's time for me to go back there. All right, before let's take a really quick phone call from Frank. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Derek. Thank you very much for taking my call. Derek, and I will be looking online for your information. One thing that interests me is the zoning. We're currently in a local neighborhood fight with Northeastern Illinois University, who's seizing property at the end of my block to build dorms for 500 students in a residential neighborhood. We've tried to FOIA the plans the university has to no avail. We can't get a hold of them, presumably because the contract hasn't been signed with the general contractor who's going to build this 5 to 6 story structure on both sides of Bryn Mawr. So would your app that you can look at zoning information actually help us out?
So that's fascinating. So the Second City zoning app that I created takes the data from the city of Chicago about the existing zoning as it is right now here in Chicago. So you can look up any property by address, and it'll tell you how it's zoned. We unfortunately don't have any information about things that are coming down the pipeline. And you guys have already tried the thing that I would try, which is FOIAing or filing a Freedom of Information Request Act on it. And I have oftentimes heard reasons given such as that, which is, oh, well, we can't give it to you because it hasn't been approved yet or confirmed yet. And, I mean, I would say that... In Chicago, the way that zoning works is very much up to each alderman. The aldermen have – the 50 aldermen have what's called aldermanic purview, which means that in – when it comes to matters directly affecting their ward, they have – pretty much final say on just about everything,
right.
Especially zoning. So I would assume sure. The alderman, if you have a relationship with that alderman, that might be an avenue to figure out some of this information. But other than that, you may just have to keep trying to file more FOIA requests.
Right. We understand. And we've tried to get information from Alderman Loreno. And it's interesting that this thing has gone from very hush-hush, we don't know anything, to very rush-rush, where apparently the eminent domain lawsuits are going to be filed next week.
Wow. So,
that's fast.
Yeah, there's some real urgency around this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no time to develop an app in a couple of days.
Yeah. But. Well, I would say that oftentimes it might seem like you're sort of beating your head against the wall, but actually outside pressure and outside publicity can really, for about an issue such as this, can actually move the needle on the inside.
Right.
Ultimately, like, you know, your alderman is an elected representative, and they are up for election pretty soon, actually. So you have more leverage than maybe it may seem. So I would invite you guys to really do what you can to voice your concerns.
And if things go a little slower than you anticipate, this might be a chance for you to show up at OpenGov Hack Night.
Well, you know, that certainly is an option. We do have a website up. It's neiulandgrab.com, and we've got an online petition on change.org. And when I checked this morning, we had 635 supporters so
wow.
far.
Great.
So, you know, we're trying everything we can from a grassroots level, but sometimes, you know, you run into the old axiom, you can't fight City Hall.
I totally get it. Frank, I got to let you go, but I'm certainly glad you called and alerted us to that.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, have a great Sunday. All right, in 30 seconds, what is your – I know, we're running out of time here. I got to get Stacey Myers on the show. What's your favorite app that you've been involved in and why?
Man, it's like asking me to pick
I know,
my
which
favorite,
your favorite child.
Yeah,
yes,
right,
okay.
Exactly. Man, so I mean, I love them all in their own different way. They each do.
They're all equal to me.
I'll get to it. I'll pick one. Just give me a second. they all sort of are their own unique sort of attempt at getting at a certain kind of issue or topic.
Sure.
I think one of my favorite ones is actually the first one I ever created. It's ChicagoLobbyists.org. It is an application that in many ways sort of has like a personal importance to me because at the time this is back in 2011. This new data had come out on the city's data portal. And there was a group of us. I was actually working at a company called Webitex at the time. And my boss, Paul Baker, really wanted to make an app about lobbying. And so he sort of organized all this and sort of really – it was through this application that I got started on this entire – in this entire journey. And it's actually a very cool app. It's like Facebook for lobbyists. You can see every lobbyist that has been interacting with the city of Chicago, who's been hiring them, how much they've been paying them, what issues they are their lobbyists about. And you can really just sort of get a really deep view into what's this very important part of how government works. And we made sure to make the app in a way that wasn't necessarily too slanted as far as having an opinion about lobbyists. We don't say
that's my job.
We don't say they're good. We don't say they're bad. We just say, here's the data, right? And mm-hmm. you can infer from that what you will. And that's actually a pretty important tenet of a lot of the applications we do. I'd say having sort of a non-biased approach to the data and doing just your best to explain what's going on to as accurately as you can gives you an immense amount of power. And mm-hmm. People really are going to pay attention to you as opposed to maybe dismiss you as saying, oh, well, I don't agree with that opinion.
Exactly. You have to right? be careful how you right. phrase it right. and how you couch it.
Right.
And that is available. You can see all of these apps, including that one, at opencityapps.org. Here's another interesting one, vacant and abandoned building finder. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Before I let you go, one of the things that happened is that there was a competition for apps by the Center for Neighborhood Technology. They had an urban sustainability apps competition. How come you didn't win?
I sort of recuse myself from competing in those application contests.
A guy named Tom Greenhaw was involved in something called Chicago Green Score. And it ranks city neighborhoods according to whether they have abundant green roofs, community gardens, farmers markets, et cetera, public transportation. So I went on and I put in my address and I got a score, which is like 49. I'm in Logan Square.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things it said is there's no nearby community gardens. Mine's on the corner. So I wrote to Tom and I said, hey, you guys have inaccurate data. Because there's a community garden there. And he said, that's part of the problem. You can only work with what you can find.
That's right.
And so that's an interesting point about these applications.
Absolutely. And I would add to that, like, so that's absolutely true. The applications, as I said, are only as good as the data behind them. But one thing you can do to, and this is what I've found borne out over time, is one thing you can do is just do what you can with the data you have and put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this exact same thing happened with Chicago lobbyists, where we put out a version of the app early on, but there was data missing. We knew, you know, how much money each lobbyist was paid, and we knew who their clients were, but we didn't know exactly how much money was changing hands between these two groups.
Yeah.
And after we released that the website as it was and put all these little disclaimers all over it saying, we'd love to show you this, but we don't have the data. And we'd love to show you this, but we don't have the data. And so after we did that, we ended up getting a response back from the city, ended up having a meeting with the city in City Hall, and we presented them with 10 things that we would like to ask if they have additional data on. And they brought in people from we met the person whose job it was at the Department of Ethics to take these forms that the lobbyists have to fill out mm-hmm. and report. And he was hand typing them into the system.
Oh,
he's the
goodness.
Guy that made our data, right?
Right.
And we had this conversation. We said, can you give us these things? And we're like, yes, we can. And so 2 weeks later, they updated the data.
That's
and
amazing.
We updated our app. And the mayor got to go on to, I think he went on to Chicago Tonight and said, hey, look, more transparency data. Like, win for us, win for them, right? So
right.
That's the sort of story that I really like. Again, another reason why I like that particular application, a Chicago lobbyist. But that is a pattern that is really held true over time with all these different applications.
Well, Derek Eder, thank you so much. I want you back on the show at some point. We'll talk more environmental apps. We're going to get that Petco app going. I'm working on that. All the information is on my website, mikenovak.net, because there's, like we said before, Derek is all over the place, but we've got the links to his website, and we've got the link to Open City and more, and OpenGov Hack Night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
The Iliana Tollway in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Okay, we're in the home stretch here on the Mike Novak Show. I'm immediately going to the phone line to bring in Stacy Myers, who's the policy coordinator for Open Lands. Stacy, good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the show, especially since we're getting to crunch time, at least one of the crunch times.
Yeah.
Because who knows how long this will go on. But about the Iliana Tollway, and this is, as I've said and other people have said, the so-called highway to nowhere. Some people want this to be built in Will County. It's a 47-mile stretch of road that would connect Interstate 55 near Wilmington to Interstate 65 north of Lowell County, Lowell in Lake County, Indiana. There's a lot of problems with this toll way, and I want to have you get to them in a second, but why is this week important? What can people do right away if they don't like the idea?
Oh, well, this week is absolutely important in that the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, which has basically gathered all the insight and vision of communities throughout the seven-region Chicagoland area and compiled them into this wonderful plan of how we can live and work sustainably into the future, they are determining whether or not to keep the Ileana on its major capital project list, basically the list, the short list of our transportation priorities, where our money's going to go for the next into 2040. And actually what it means is for the next 39 years for the Ileana. It's critical because CMAP is looking to us to see whether or not we're okay with this. And for all of the reasons, for all the damage that this road will cause, as well as all that it will do to detract from transportation solutions that we desperately need throughout our region, it's a really good idea if you can to let CMAP know either at a public hearing on July 31st between 4 and 7 downtown, or through their website to file public comments, that this is just not something that we're going to tolerate, not something that we want.
As you mentioned, there's a lot of reasons why this is a bad policy, one of which is the Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie, which would be severely affected by building this road.
Yeah, one of the major problems with this, one of the many, is that we have this beautiful macro site of 23 state and federally protected natural areas. It's gorgeous. It's like this gem-encrusted lattice of all these beautiful natural areas. And at the epicenter of it is Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie. And this road would cut right underneath the prairie and throw noise and sound and exhaust into areas where grassland birds, some of the rarest kind of birds that you can find, nest. And unfortunately, the Illinois Department of Transportation's answer to the damage that it's going to cause is that birds' common sense dictates are mobile creatures, and so they'll just fly away from the disturbance.
And never come back.
Right. That's the problem. So, and that's not even counting the fact that what this road is going to do is pull trucks that are basically right now north of Madewin through the heart of this gorgeous natural area that we've devoted millions to restore through some of the most beautiful, quiet prairie that you can find. And I don't know if you've ever stood in the middle of a prairie. Unfortunately, sound carries.
Yes.
And those birds that are living there need that quiet.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Let's take a, I've been following Joel Greenberg as he's been putting together Project Passenger Pigeon and his book. And you know, and a lot of the disturbance was partly the cause of the decline of the passenger pigeon.
Right.
And there are other birds that are affected that way. And the other thing you mentioned is, you know, the cost of this, it's going to fall on the backs of the citizens of Illinois. The proponents of it claim, oh, don't worry, we'll find the funding for it. And then it looks more and more like the $1.2, $1.3 billion will end up on the backs of the citizens of Illinois.
Yeah, no, that's true. In addition to taking globally rare habitat for just this incredible diversity of species, and in addition to taking farmland, paving over thousands of acres of some of the most productive farmland that we have the cost financially to our state, which is staggering. What IDOT is proposing is basically a $1 billion subsidy in order to build this road in the middle of these rural hamlets that don't want it, that want to continue to farm, to basically cut through 10 miles south of where we have Joliet. And the cost, if you look at the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning's plan, is just clearly shown in their major capital projects list, which is where what we're talking about, what they're asking us to comment on. And you can see all of these needs that are backburnered because we're going to have to devote just a huge percentage of our transportation dollars for new roads for years to come.
You know, I call this 1950s thinking.
It is.
We need to move beyond the 1950s. And that hearing you were talking about, July 31st from 4 to 7 p.m. at CMAP downtown office in the Willis Tower at 233 South Wacker Drive, Suite 800. You can also, and you, one of the places you can go is openlands.org/Ileana. And get more information. Sierra Club has information. You can go to the Illinois Sierra Club and find it as well. The CMAP board has information, and I hope folks will act this week before August 1st to make their feelings known. Stacy, thank you so much for being on the show and managing to get out a little bit of information on this, and we will continue to follow it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
You too.
We are wrapping it up. Turn on your microphone, Helen. Everybody, get ready to say go home. I say go green or
go home.
There you go.